so.
So as y'all are getting situated, if you would like a clipboard-like object or paper, and I think somewhere in here, that's mostly unlined paper. Here is what seems to be the entire holding supply of lined paper. But I understand if people prefer that to unlined paper. I was thinking the odds are that people have been, this is only my third day here, but it's the first birthday that's been announced, that people must be shy, because statistically, there should be a birthday more than once every 3 days.
Yeah.
And certainly if you include anniversaries. So thank you for being public about your birthday.
You've got pencil sharpener.
Oh, gosh, where did I see the pencil sharpener?
Thank you.
Oh, you know what? The post office is where I've seen the pencil sharpener. I will sharpen pencils tomorrow. Yes. Okay. So if you were not here yesterday, if you could take an index card, and if you were here yesterday, you've already done that, so you don't need another one.
So this is if you weren't here.
If you weren't here, please take one.
I was here.
Oh. I didn't listen. Yeah, no, index card is for newbies. Newbies only.
So it's the same as yesterday?
Yes. Yes.
For people who weren't
here
yesterday.
For people who were not here, yeah.
Oh, for
another
yesterday.
For another card.
And for those of you who were here yesterday, thank you for coming back. I realize that there are a lot of things to do at Holden, so I really appreciate that.
Are you with the CIA or somebody like this? You want everybody to be registered?
No. I just, I find it helps me to have a sense of kind of where people are coming from with their writing, you know, and is the most important thing they ever wrote a letter to their mother, or have they published 5 books, or have they done a thesis, or, because this, you know, this is Holden, it could be any of the above, right? So for those of you who are new, that are wondering what I'm talking about, the thing I would like you to write on the card, and I'll write this up on the board when I find my markers that actually work, is number one, your name, and then we're going to go around and introduce ourselves. Number two, the main reason that you chose to come to this workshop on this fine evening. And it doesn't have to be, you know, the top part here says, it's my day off. So it can be any reason you want. And then the third thing is, what's the most important thing that you've written in your life? And it has to be something that you did actually write down, but it does not have to be anything that was formal. For example, it could be a letter to someone. But what do you consider to be the most important thing that you've written in your life? So, one, your name. Two, main reason you came to this workshop. And number three, most important thing you've written. So, welcome. And one thing I think is interesting about the schedule at Holden is that I sort of assumed, because the other places that I've taught, they have you teach at the same time each day, that I think it's interesting that here you explicitly don't teach at the same time each day, so you see people at different points in their daily rhythm. And I am really a night person, so this is about the time where I'm like just getting going. But I realize that for some people, it's been a really long day. And we've already had dinner, and now we're sleepy. So thank you for coming here post-dinner. And what I'd like to do to get started here, and we'll do this quickly since there's a good number of us here, and I want us to spend most of the time writing. But I'd like you to just tell us your name, and if you have any particular questions or thoughts that you're bringing to a workshop that's specifically about narration. What we're going to be talking about here today is the theme of my whole week is writing what's essentially personal narrative or memoir or family history, where you're writing about yourself in some way, or your family, or your own life. And so one of the things that is essential to that is you're probably going to be writing in the first person. So what we're going to be talking about today is how do you get to know this first person character, your I, that is on the page. And that might sound like a really ridiculous question, but it's actually a really complex question that people spend a lot of time worrying about in writing land. So what if you came here for a specific reason related to that question, who is the person telling my story, please let me know that so I can kind of craft what we do over the next 55 minutes. And most of you were here yesterday, so you know me. My name's Wendy. This is my first time at Holden. I've now been here for 2.5 days, so I feel like I know a lot more than I did yesterday at 11 in the morning. And I actually spent a good portion of my time in graduate school, which is, it was getting a master's in writing, not a PhD, grappling with the very question that we're talking about today. And I found that the more I thought about it, the more I realized that it is really complicated to think about who is, when you say, I did this, I did that, who is this person that's speaking, you know, to your audience? So that's why I wanted to do this workshop. So how about we start in the back?
So what do you
just your name, and if there's a particular question that you brought to this workshop or a particular thing you were hoping to get out of this workshop.
Okay, I'm Pearson, and I'd like to find a new story. I'd like to actually examine the story that I've created and be more conscious of maybe a little healthier story.
Uh-huh. Okay.
My name is Irina, and if you know me at all, you'll know that I am all about self-awareness and presence and who it is that I am. So I'm actually coming at this from more of a philosophical standpoint. Mm-hmm. An interesting thing.
There's no one else in your row, right?
No.
Okay, let's come up here.
My name is Danny.
Okay.
My name is Ami. I just came to this, or what are we saying?
If there's a particular reason you came to this workshop.
I just thought it sounded interesting.
Okay, great.
I'm Hannah, and there isn't really a particular reason why I came to this workshop.
Okay.
I'm Kathy, and it sounded interesting, and I'm just trying to learn new things, and I'm normally not a writer, so I'm glad I'm here.
I'm Alan. No questions.
Okay. Can I come up here?
I'm Adrian. I'm just kind of curious.
About the specific question of
the class, just
okay.
What it's about.
Okay, great.
I'm Lorna, and I'm hoping to get started in writing a memoir.
Yay!
My name's Larry, and I write a travel journal whenever my wife and I go on longer trips, which is about every 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. And this question of how I talk about me has always been sort of problematic. I have trouble with I, mm-hmm. because I was raised not to put a lot of emphasis on myself. Mm-hmm. And I find when there are too many I's in my writing, I don't like it. Mm-hmm. But then I go to one says or one thinks, and that's also very impersonal. And I just don't know how to balance it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My name is Mina, and I'm seeking inspiration from everybody.
And you're speaking what?
Inspiration.
Oh, okay. Great.
My name is Otto, and I hope to write more of my memoirs. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Hi.
My name is Liz, and I write all the time for Noel, only for my own edification.
Uh-huh.
I used to write memoir stories, and I know nothing about the craft of writing, so I'm interested in learning about the craft. And also somewhat of a dilemma if you're writing where others are going to read it, or whether you're writing just for your own pleasure and expression, and how you balance that,
mm-hmm.
particularly with memoirs and stories.
Right.
My name's Casey, and I try to come to writing workshops simply because it helps me write something that I wouldn't necessarily have thought of to write by myself.
And I'm Trish Pipkin, and I am working on two unpublished novels that are in a pretty rough state. And I've just, and even though I didn't write much that was out of them or related to them, I got so much help from Bodine when he was here, and I'm sure I will from this class as well.
I see we can do it in an hour. now, 50 minutes. So if you filled out one of those little cards, if you could pass those around to me. And for those of you who were here yesterday, you know, we talked about, you know, what are the important stories of our lives, and then picked one and wrote more about it. If you weren't here yesterday, that's totally fine. Also, if you just came in, we have paper, both lined and unlined, and a lot of maybe not so great writing utensils. So if you're not finding a good writing utensil, if you don't like the one you have, you can come up here and switch it out. I think what one of my little projects for tonight is going to be to go through this box and actually pull out the things that write in a color that is reasonable. You know, some of the things are Crayola markers, which we are actually going to use at a workshop later this week, but not tonight. So this question of who is the person telling my story, as I mentioned, is something that I've sort of wrangled with a lot. And some of the questions that you all just brought up are ones that have been of great concern to me. Larry, when you were mentioning that when you write these travel journals, obviously these are things that actually happened. This is your impression of them. But there are probably also times where you're writing maybe a history of the place that you're in or other people's impressions of a place. And a lot of it does come down to this sort of technical, crafty issue of I don't want to start every sentence of my story with I. I saw this, I went here, I ate this, I did this. But we're sort of experiencing a shift in how, or have been, I would say, for the last now close to 25 years, in how we write nonfiction, where it used to be that it was considered much less acceptable to tell things first person. Journalists were not allowed to do that. Biographers did not do that. And that was the main kinds of nonfiction. There was history, there was biography, and there was journalism. And now, when you go and, you know, look in a bookstore or the library in the nonfiction section, there is a huge amount of memoir, which is a fairly recent genre. Although the roots of memoir go back literally thousands of years, it was not something that many, many people aspired to write in the way that we do now. And even a lot of things that we would normally classify as journalism are now things that are written first person. So most of my own writing, I write some memoir, but the things that I've actually published, and particularly, you know, a book that I published last year was not a memoir. It was my story about time that I spent in Mexico and people that I met there. And it was really my interpretation of their story of what was going on in their lives. And what the focus of the book is the way that economic globalization is changing village life. The specific example was southern Mexico, but obviously this is happening everywhere in the world. And so I really found myself getting caught up in this issue of this was not my story. I'm not Mexican. I'm not a villager. I was going to a place where that was very foreign to me in many ways. But I needed to use the first person because I wanted it to be clear to my reader, this is just my impression of someone else's story. This is what I was told. This is what I saw during the 2.5 years that I lived there. That for me to not use first person felt very disingenuous, because I wanted it to be clear to the reader, this is just one person's impression of this story. And if what you're writing is a family history or a story about something that happened to you in your life, that issue comes up again. That this is really just your version of what might be a much bigger story. And if any of you have had the experience of writing an essay or writing a short memoir about some aspect of your life or something that happened to you, and then somebody else in your family who also experienced this thing reads what you wrote, the first thing they're going to say to you is, that's not at all what happened. And I think that's an unavoidable reality of this, that of course what we experience is what we as an individual experience. And that is one of the central tensions of figuring out how to tell a story about a thing that actually happened. If what you're writing is fiction, you don't need to worry about this. You know, certainly some of the writing exercises that we'll do over the course of this week are useful in fiction, but this is one area where fiction writers are completely off the hook, right? It's people who are writing about things that actually happen that have this problem of how do you express that this is your impression of what happened and not anybody else's impression. When I first, the very first writing workshop that I ever took, which wasn't that long ago, it was 12 years ago now, the first day we went in and my teacher said, in nonfiction, the narrator is the only thing that you can make up. Which really sort of blew my mind. I couldn't stop thinking about this. In nonfiction, the narrator is the only thing that you can make up. And I thought, what is he talking about? And it took me a really long time to sort of come around to having any sense of what it was that he was talking about. And now, I've come to believe that that is really deeply true. And so one of the things that we're going to do in this over the next 45 minutes is sort of explore, as we are thinking about the person who's going to narrate our story, in what ways is this the person who actually exists in the world? But before we kind of get into those exercises, I want to just pause and ask you all, what do you think about this statement? In nonfiction, the narrator is the only thing you can make up.
It would completely change the story based on who narrated it.
Right.
So you could really have fun with it.
Right. So it's a good way to see it. It's a way to have multiple different stories. For those of you that have written sort of first-person nonfiction, does this resonate as true? Does it seem ridiculous?
I think it's really good because you experience yourself as such a wide variety of things that and to decide who of all those things is going to be telling the story just seems like a really good idea. And so that you maintain the same kind of voice. And, you know, I have friends, I have relatives, and I have relatives in North Alabama, and you know what they do with Copper River salmon? Why, they deep fry it. And I tried it myself with a cheap piece of salmon, and it was pretty good. But, you know, that's one of the people that I am that I can, if I slip into that accidentally, when you're just writing yourself,
yeah.
And then you can slip into people that you are, but that are not going to come across to your reader as being consistent with who.
Right.
And so that seems like a really good idea to choose the person, the narrator, yourself, and eliminate some things and emphasize others, and you can have fun with it, too.
I'm thinking it doesn't even have to be a person. It could be an animal, it could be a tree, it could be a house. You could really, or take this
yeah.
super, or ant.
I mean, it would be a hard thing to do depending on what genre of nonfiction in which you are working. But it's true that there have been some things. Actually, the thing about the animal is funny, just because I remember my, they're kind of gone out of fashion now with email, but do you remember when we all got the Christmas letters, the Xerox Christmas letters, and all the Christmas cards? And they usually were told third person. I mean, sometimes the person writing the letter actually used first person, but usually each family member got like a paragraph. And I remember my mother would open them and she would say, oh, another Christmas letter from the dog. And that was sort of the obvious narrator, because but sometimes the dog got a paragraph too, and it was told in third person. So, you know, it was like God or, you know, a spirit narrated the Christmas letter.
I have
a question. In writing memoirs, it seems like there's a difference whether you're writing for a reader and who the reader would be. Am I writing just to get on paper my own experience? Am I writing it so my family members can read it? Am I writing it so I can enter it in a writing contest and win an award?
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, I'm asking whether you really need to go way back and decide who the reader is. Is it just me? Is it?
I think that's a really good question. I think, you know, for tonight's purposes, we should assume that someone besides, this is not just for a journal. I mean, you know, this kind of journal, private journal. That the idea is that we want to write something that someone else is going to read. Maybe that's just the granddaughter who asked us to write the story down. Maybe that's a sibling who went through this experience with you. You know, maybe it is some anonymous public that we don't know. But I do think that's a crucial question, no matter what it is that you're trying to write, because who you intend this to be for is going to greatly influence not just what story you tell, but how you tell the story. Like, which of your identities, you know, Trish Pipkin, is going to make sense given who the audience might be. And somebody else started to say something. Yeah, Harry.
Even in stories that we remember fairly well, there are gaps in those stories.
Mm-hmm.
And as we sit down, and as I sit down and try to tell that story, I think I have to admit myself that I may not have that story quite right. And that, to a certain extent, I'm making up part of that story.
Yeah.
And I have to give myself permission to fill the gaps. And
right.
May or may not be correct.
Right. And that's, you know, and that's a huge question that comes up in the writing, you know, of memoir, and how people choose to fill those gaps, and how other people who are being written about are going to feel about how the gaps were filled, and whether the writer, when you think about different memoir you've written, whether the writer kind of clues you in. I don't actually remember what happened next, but here's one imagining of it, or here's what my aunt told me, or whatever. You can see different kind of tricks that writers do to kind of clue you in. Here's why I filled in a gap. I don't really know, you know, what happened here. And then there are other writers that just knit together their story, and there's none of those little road signs to let you know. I have no idea whether this is correct. I'm just, you know, and, you know, sometimes people get in big trouble. But I think because memoir is a fairly new genre, we're still trying to work out, you know, what are the rules here. And one of the things that's interesting to me is, depending on what kind of literary or writerly tradition the writer comes from, they have a completely different set of ethics for it. When a poet writes a memoir, they follow a completely different set of ethics than when a historical scholar writes one, or when a journalist writes one. And the thing I find interesting about that is that they're all sure that they're right. But there is actually, one of the things that the journalists talk about is that there is actually no set ethical code for nonfiction writing, in the way that if you become a pastor, or if you become a doctor, or if you become a police officer, there's a particular ethical code that you are made very familiar with before you take on that position. There's no such process for writers, which makes things both a lot of fun and really complicated. Any other thoughts about this, that in nonfiction the narrator is the only thing you can make up?
A lot of times when you're reading nonfiction and biography, there are extensive conversations.
Yeah, that's one of the big things is dialogue.
And I may remember a conversation I had yesterday fairly clearly, but a conversation I had a year ago or five years ago.
Sometimes I remember the ones I had 10 years ago more clearly than yesterday. but it's funny because that has become an area of quite a bit of contention, and I think it's something that's hugely influenced by being part of a culture that is primarily a film and TV-oriented culture, where we expect dialogue, even though, of course, that's not being, you know, of course you didn't have a tape recorder when you were 7 and your father said something terrible to you that you're now writing about, that you're 47. So it can be a really messy area. But what I want to do is actually get into some writing, and we're going to start by making a list. And this is going back exactly to what Trish said about all of the different identities that you hold, different personalities that you can slip into, different people you've been at different times in your life. And what I want you to do is make a list and see how many things you can get down in, you know, the 3 minutes that I give you to do this. But what I want you to do is make a numbered list that, ending the sentence, I am blank. What are all of the different identities that you have in terms of work, in terms of personal life, in terms of relationships to people, in terms of ethnic background, religious background? How many different ways can you finish that sentence? I am blank.
Can you give a few examples?
I am a mother. I am a cousin. I am a teacher. I am Catholic. Any sort of category of people that you that can fit yourself into.
Oh, so as many as you can.
As many as you can think of, yeah. I am. So yeah, these are categories of people, not personality traits. Okay, and I'll tell you when we are at 3 minutes. And it will be helpful for you if you number them. So how many categories do people have on their list?
16.
16. Pardon?
36.
36? Anybody more than 36? Probably like really fast writing. Anyone have a really pretty small number?
I have only 7, but...
7? Anyone less than 7? So 7 to 36 is our range. So I want you to take a look at your list and just think about these different categories. Which ones of these are very important to you in terms of how you spend your time? Which ones are groups of people that you feel are misunderstood by the rest of society, groups of people about which other people have stereotypes that are incorrect? Which ones of these identities are highly honored by our society and esteemed by society? And just take a look at your list. You don't have to write anything down, but just think about these different identities from those criteria. Which ones do you spend a lot of time in? Which ones do you feel like you have to defend sometimes? And which ones are easy to take a lot of pride in because our society looks up to those people? I'll write those three. So looking at your list,
yeah.
Do you each feel like you have an identity that goes in each of these three categories? Maybe.
I guess I don't. About not understood.
Folks from Harlan, Kentucky are never misunderstood.
You know. Feeling that I can see where it would be misunderstood, but I just have a kind of feeling that it's always other people that are misunderstood.
Yeah, this doesn't mean we care, right? This doesn't mean that we care what people think, but...
I don't understand that large investment of the what? I don't
of time. Meaning this is something you put a lot of time into. For example, if you know, one of your identities is parent of a 4-year-old, probably that's a good chunk of your waking life is being parent of a 4-year-old.
So is that one of the ones, or...
I'm sorry. This was just three different categories I wanted you to think about. And obviously, you have some identities on your list that might not fit into any of these.
Okay.
I'm having trouble pulling myself apart from these categories. Some of these categories are sort of interwoven together.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't pull a lot of them apart.
Yeah. And that's the thing that this is one of the ways, and actually that's a really good way of putting it, that we have to separate... In writing, you have to separate who you are on the page from who you are in the world. And so I'm going to read a little thing here that will help us start to get at this. So this is an essay in an anthology that I co-edited called Telling True Stories that came out a good number of years ago now. It's about 5 years old. And there are 52 different writers in this book, and it's essentially a book about how to tell true stories. Most of the people in here are journalists. But one of the writers in here is a writer who's primarily known as a personal essayist. He also writes a lot of film criticism, named Philip Lopate. I don't know if anyone here has heard of him. But he's considered sort of a master of the personal essay in particular, or the essay in which you talk about your some aspect of your life. And the title of his essay is The Personal Essay and the First Person Character, so this I. So I'm going to read just a little bit of this. He says, "Nothing is more common in a personal essay than the letter I. It is a perfectly good word, one that no writer should be ashamed to use. The problem with I is not that it is in bad taste, but that fledgling writers may think they have conveyed more with that word than they actually have. In their own minds, that I swarms with a lush, sticky past and an almost fatal specificity. Whereas the reader encountering it for the first time in a new piece of writing sees only a slender telephone pole standing in the middle of a sentence, trying to catch a few signals to send on. Even the barest I holds a whisper of promised engagement, but it doesn't give a clear picture of who is speaking. To give that picture, you must build yourself into a character." And then he goes on for several pages to talk about how one might do that. But this is what you're pointing to there, I think, is exactly the challenge that you have when you're using writing in the first person and thinking about writing in the first person, in that you are a zillion different things all at once, far more than 36. Some of those roles are roles you put a lot of time into. Some of those roles are roles that you did not choose for yourself. You know, a survivor of a violent crime, a survivor of abuse. There are many identities we have that we did not choose, a physically unhealthy person. Then there are others that we have chosen to take on, that maybe we're very proud of, maybe society agrees with us or not. But each one of these identities indicates a different kind of interaction with the world, and there's no way to get all of that on the page. There's no way that you can write even the longest book in the world and have your reader understand all of the different kinds of identities you have, even if your list only has 7 things on it. That's still too many. So the reason I asked you to do the list and then ask you to think about these 3 different categories, which are obviously not inclusive, is that depending on which category you choose, you are developing a different relationship with your reader. And based on what that reader's personality and preferences and likes and dislikes and stereotypes are, you're going to have a different relationship with your reader. So that's sort of the idea. So when you're thinking about what are you going to tell your reader about yourself in whatever it is you're writing, you're going to be setting up your reader to have a different set of ideas about you as a person. And that can become pretty complicated depending on who you want to read your piece. Just to give a kind of arbitrary example, let's say that your grandchild, who's a high school student, has asked you to write about your own life, because your grandchild wants to get to know you better. So you do. And this person knows you as grandma, right? This person who always took care of me, this, you know, sweet person that the grandchild's mind is very old and perfect. And one of the things you write about in your memoir is some things you did that, you know, when you were a crazy kid. The grandchild might be completely scandalized. That is going to be a different story from the grandchild's point of view than if you just papered over those things and you didn't mention those things and you continue to keep up the role of, you know, I'm the perfect unerring grandma in the story. So you, as the author, have these choices to make. Do you want to scandalize your reader? Do you want your reader to think of you as your best friend? You know, what relationship do you want your reader to have with you, whoever this person is? And that is not necessarily an easy question to answer. So I want to do a couple more exercises related to this list, but I want to pause here and see if people have questions or comments based on what they've written down or what we've been talking about thus far. Everybody's good? Ready to move on? Okay. So now, not looking at your list, I want you to think about and then write down in one sentence or phrase, a story that you would like to tell, that you would like to write down. The other thing I should say, for those of you that weren't here yesterday, is unlike a lot of writing workshops, we are not going to share what we wrote at the end of class today. which is in some cases kind of unusual. Sometimes there are writing workshops where you spend half the time writing and then the other half of the time reading aloud what you wrote. But since it's really important to me that people feel free to write whatever they want to write, that then making them share it is a nice way to make everybody feel very uncreative and inhibited. So no, you do not have to share. We're not going to share anything today, but there is going to be a sharing opportunity on Friday. And do we have the time and place set, Trish, for
no,
that?
No, we don't. We'll
okay.
have to talk to Cindy about that.
Okay, but Friday afternoon?
No, I think it's going to be Friday after Vespers.
As for Vespers. Okay, so Friday after Vespers, there will be a chance to share some portion of
what
you
So what are we writing down? 8:30 in Fireside.
That was just a little, you were here yesterday, so you already heard that? Oh, you weren't? Okay, I was just trying to explain that before.
I'm
so
confused, but we're writing down now.
I know, I'm about to tell you.
Yeah, okay.
You're confused because I haven't told you yet. what I would like you to write right now is think of a story that you want to spend the rest of our time here writing down that is some story from your life, something that happened that you would like to get down on paper. And once you have in your mind what that is, I want you to write it down just in a phrase. Like, for example, it could be the birth of my first child, how I decided to become a nurse, how I ended up at Holden, whatever it is that you want to, you know, something that feels like you can take it on in 15 minutes of writing and actually make some progress on it. Just write down in one phrase what that is, what story you're going to tell. Does everybody have something in mind?
I don't.
No?
I have many things and I have no idea what.
Can you just pick one randomly?
Not right now.
Okay. Anybody else not able to pick something?
I have a lot of things.
Everybody else has something?
One of the problems is weight. Do I want to tell a weighty story? Do I want to tell just a story? Mm-hmm. Is it easier to tell a weighty story?
That's a good question. I would suggest that you have two ideas in mind if you're feeling torn, a weighty, a lightweight, because you might decide based on what I ask you to do next. So what I want you to do once you have an idea in mind is I want you to go through your list of identities and pick one identity who's going to be your I. The narrator of your story is going to be a mother, or the narrator of your story is going to be a cook, or the narrator of your story is going to be a former police officer, whatever it is, you get just one of the many eyes that you are. And I want you to then write that story from that, keeping in mind this is my narrator. Does that make sense? Does everybody have a story and a narrator in mind? So we're going to write for 15 minutes. Which is a long time. And for those of you who weren't here yesterday, the technique I would suggest you use, but it's certainly not required, is free writing, meaning just write without stopping. Put your pen down on the page and go for 15 minutes, which is a long time to do that. If you get tired, then I would suggest that you start just making a list or whatever comes to mind, but you'll probably end up with the most interesting stuff if you don't go back and reread what you've already written. But just keep going, keep going, keep going. So the idea is keep going, even if it doesn't make sense, even if you kind of find yourself going off on a tangent. And for 15 minutes, tell whatever story it is that you've chosen from the perspective of one of your eyes, one of the identities that you hold in your life. And I'll let you know when you're getting close to 15 minutes.
I don't think mine's blend together because I have memories I wanted to write a story about, but I don't know how they relate to any of these that I wrote down.
Well, maybe you need to pick a different identity because they must relate to some identity you have.
Who I am now, I guess. I mean, I have memories that I remember. But
I'd like you to do for just one more minute is, without going back and rereading what you wrote, make a note to yourself of what else do you want to include in this story. When you come back to this in 2 weeks and you find this piece of paper and you think, oh, right, what will prompt you to figure out what you need to write to finish this story? Just write yourself a little note about what happens next. Unless you magically told a 15-minute story, which maybe you did. So did you find that you were able to stay in the role that you had chosen for yourself? Or did you have other narrators come out?
Well, I did cheat because I didn't have this I am until I decided to write a story that I remembered. Mm-hmm. I'm also this, so this helped me. So, yeah, I kind of cheated.
There's no cheating in free writing. You all wrote really diligently for 15 minutes, so congratulations, because that's a long time. And really, the only way to cheat in free writing is to not write, you know, honestly. Anything else you get down on the page, you know, these are things that are not lost to you now. How did it go for others in terms of actually thinking of yourself as that one I as you were telling the story? Yeah.
It was really easy for me. I chose I am a paradox.
Mm.
And so as long as I wasn't consistent.
Beautiful. Yeah.
And that could be, yeah, because that's okay.
Any other observations about picking
a
narrative
sure.
role?
I'm not sure. Sometimes my reader is my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure my kids can understand this.
And that's also a really common challenge that you face when you're thinking about who your audience is how do you respect your audiences, you know, intelligence and depth of experience, and not pitch too high or too low, because you all know the experience of reading something where you feel like the narrator is speaking down to you. But it's equally frustrating to read something where you don't know what on earth this person is talking about. But one of the things that I in my own life try to think about when I'm thinking about writing is that, just like when my teacher told me at the first writing workshop I ever took, in nonfiction, the narrator is the only thing you can make up. I had no idea what he was talking about for a good number of years. But I realized that somehow having this statement in my mind that I didn't understand was continuing to guide me in my education, because I wanted to understand. So, you know, maybe your kids will understand it 10 years after the first time they read it.
The reaction I have, I would much prefer to sit here for 3 hours and write the story. I mean, it's frustrating. I'm there.
Yeah.
But also in relation to what this gentleman was saying, particularly my daughter-in-law, interestingly enough, really wants me to write stories about who I really am.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows me as the mother-in-law. And my
mm-hmm.
kids know me as mother, which
mm-hmm.
is simply one of, 18 that I quickly wrote down.
Right.
And
right.
my treasure. But who I am really is much more the other 17 that they don't,
right.
they only get glimpses of.
Right, right.
But my dilemma is, how much do I write? Do I need to keep in mind what will enhance, after I'm long gone, enhance their memories and life of knowing me?
Mm-hmm.
Or what was critical in my own personal development, but there's really nothing they need to have to deal with. Or, do you know what I'm trying to say? Maybe not.
Well, it's sort of the crux of the problem, regardless of whether your audience is, you know, your children and your children-in-law, or some public that we don't even know about yet, in that it's all an artifice on some level, right? There is no way that you can put the complexity of yourself into, we are all a big mass of paradoxes. So what's the best way to oversimplify it? I mean, and that's, I think, part of what it comes down to, in figuring out which oversimplification do you think will be fairest to your children, you know, and children-in-law. And that's a hard thing to come to. But the other thing is it also makes what feel like insurmountable projects become a little bit more manageable. In that, okay, I can't ever tell all the stories about my life. I don't understand all the stories about my life. But where, you know, it gives it a place to begin. So I realize that we are over 7:15. And I will hang out here for a few more minutes until I can run over to Village Center and be there on time. So if you have other questions or you want to talk, I will hang out here. The other days, tomorrow I teach at 4 o'clock, and on Thursday I teach at 11, and then on Friday I think I'm back at 4 o'clock. And usually when we're not leaving to go to Vespers, I'll stay for a half an hour after my workshop ends if you want to come and talk or want to talk to me at a meal. But I have a little bit of optional homework. Of course, it's all optional. Since this is Holden, but I would suggest that if you like the story that you worked on or something that, you know, you find compelling, first of all, finish it. Come back to this little note that you made for yourself and go through, finish, and then go and pick a completely different identity. If you pick the identity of father, pick the identity of, you know, crazy beach bum or whatever else. Pick a very different aspect of your identity and try to tell the same story from that perspective. And it's see what happens. This is not an easy assignment, but it's a really fun one. So it's a way to kind of think about what's the best way to oversimplify something, because that's kind of what you have to do.
You know, even though that there's a certain amount of artifice in this, and I find this, and we talked about it in art class today, there's that you can't make up a person that is counter to your core. and be happy with the result. It may sell, but you will not have personal satisfaction. And so if you have to leave out your core to make something that your children are going to enjoy and be able to accept, maybe you should just let your children be a little unhappy with it.
I mean, there's a lot to be said for honesty, and, you know, really, does anybody want to read something that's boring? No. You want to read something that's going to shock you in some way. So feel free to go if you want to need to do something before you head over to the Village Center, but I'll be here for a few more minutes if you want to chat more. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And you can leave the clipboards and the pens if you have them. Tomorrow I will have a more selective sections.